everybody. Welcome back to the Manufacturing Stream podcast, where we talk about manufacturing, Manufacturing 4.0, Industry 4.0, Lean Manufacturing. And today, definitely, we're going to talk a little bit about
fishing.
Definitely some fishing today.
Yeah,
our guest today is Jake Hall, the Manufacturing Millennial. And we were just doing a little chatting right up front here, and I was telling Jake what we do here on the podcast. We talk a little bit about fishing, and he said, oh, I can talk some fishing. And so, Jake, welcome to the podcast, man. Glad to have you. Good to see you again.
Yeah, Eric, Phil, it's great to be here. And now that we're talking about fishing as well, it's
just right?
We got my favorite hobby manufacturing, my second favorite hobby fishing.
I know.
Welcome. Let's just get lunch ordered this, right now. We can talk about this for a long time.
I mean, this is Christmas, man. We just hit Christmas. So
This is the problem that we have every week, is that we could sit here and talk about fishing for the entire 45 minutes that we're on the podcast or whatever, and not ever talk about manufacturing. But that's one of these days we're actually going to get into a fishing component manufacturer and then just like mix the best of both worlds together. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Have somebody here.
So. If you guys ever come to Michigan, what we can do is we can hop up, go to my cottage, hop on the pontoon boat up there.
Yes.
I'll bring my portable podcast setup rig.
And let's just do one.
It's got the mics. And then literally let's just have a podcast recording.
Yes.
Like on the pontoon boat.
How are we not best friends?
I don't know. I can see the start of a beautiful relationship.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, just before we hopped on here, Phil and I, we were booking our airline tickets. Where are we going?
Alaska.
We're going to Alaska.
Yeah.
So Phil, every year.
I've done it a lot. I go quite a bit. And so it's a great time. Eric wanted to jump on this year. I said, yep, come on. Let's do it.
This will be my second trip to Alaska. And so
we target the silvers. So silvers typically run end of August, first part of September. So we'll be there that first weekend in September and go hit some aggressive silvers. Those are so much fun to catch.
Are you fishing on a river when you guys are up there and you're doing silver salmon fishing?
And we're actually fly fishing. We're throwing great big great big heavy streamers and a lot of fun.
Fishing confession, I've never been fly fishing before.
Okay.
So now that I'm on a river up there here in Michigan, that's one of my goals, is to learn how to teach myself fly fishing, because I've always done, I've either done, you know, bass fishing coming off of a boat, or because I'm in Michigan, I'll go out and I'll do Lake Michigan fishing off of, a charter or something like that. And then you're pulling in, giant king salmon and all that stuff. So this would be something new for me, is now that I have a river that I can stand in, learn how to do some fly fishing as well.
And a couple guys.
You know a couple guys.
So
I'm going to be sending a message to you after, guys, because I got a Cabela's like two miles down the road from me. And I'd be like, okay, to go out and get my first fly rod? What should I be getting?
Get you hooked up.
What should I be, playing with to start off?
You know what I've always told my wife? I said, listen, the thing about fishing and the thing about what we do is that we've evolved out of the hunter-gatherer thing, right? We can actually go to the grocery store and get our food, and the world has figured this out. But we still have that hunter-gatherer desire deep inside of us. So part of scratching that itch is getting all the stuff that goes along. It's the sitting and tying flies, like we talked about. It's buying tackle boxes and getting tackle and all. It's just something about it.
That's
part of it.
That itch you got to go to the doctor for.
It's such a memory thing, too. So, I remember growing up, my grandfather, he was a master's fisherman. I mean, he was just one of those guys. He knew how to catch muskie. And muskie, is the fish of a thousand casts.
Yep.
For some reason, he could pull muskie out like it was nothing. I'm super excited. I have four of his trophy muskies that he mounted and all that stuff, with the longest one being like 60 some inches. I mean, just beautiful fish that are.
Yeah. What I would love to do is catch muskie on fly
fish. Yeah. Yeah.
I would love to pull a great big old muskie off of a fly rod.
By the way, for those of you that tuned into this podcast thinking we were going to talk about manufacturing, we'll get to it here in a minute. I promise. we could definitely talk about it. Have you seen the size of the flies that you fish for muskie with?
Oh man,
they're as big as a squirrel.
And then you're throwing leaded leader, right? Yeah. I mean, steel leader, because they'll bite right through mono, right?
Yeah, we definitely could talk fishing all day here.
Oh man,
no doubt about it. We always talk about this. We should just start another podcast.
I know.
That's what let's just do a bonus episode.
That's all right.
And then, you know, it's around, you know, everyone in manufacturing, but it's specifically around fishing.
Fishing. Right. That's exactly right.
You get to talk to all the manufacturers, but then you can learn about all their fishing spots
right
across the U.S.
That's so, right.
Hey, when you come to West Michigan, where I'm located, hey, here's all the fun fishing places that you can go to.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Yeah. That's what we do.
Well, we
visit my buddies. Go up to northern Wisconsin, which is where some of the biggest muskie are.
So we should put a map together of every place we're talking about.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Okay. Well, guys, I hate to be the spoiler of this whole deal, but we really need to talk some business here. So
we'll get there.
Yeah. All right. So Jake, you know, we have coming up, we're going to have our Connected Workforce Summit presented by L2L May 15th through 17th. Everybody on here who's been listening knows that we've been talking a lot about giving away a free registration to that. And the way we did that is we had people go in and make comments, leave us a comment, leave us a review of the podcast. Yeah. And we selected that name, and that name is Peggy Coombe from Cobb out of North Carolina. I think it's a subsidiary of Tyson. So
hey, Peggy,
if you're listening, you have won a free registration to the Connected Workforce Summit here in Salt Lake City, May 15th and 17th. So I'll be getting a hold of you by email. So congratulations on that. Yeah, Jake, we're really committed to making sure that we understand the connected worker and talking about the connected worker and making life easier for the connected worker on the shop floor. And I know you spend a lot of time on shop floor. So tell us a little bit about kind of what you've been seeing and kind of where you think things are headed when it comes to the connected worker. I'd like to get your insight on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I've been in the manufacturing industry for like 17 years now. My first job was literally sweeping the floors and cleaning the CNC equipment out of, you know, a machine builder in high school when I was 16. You know, and the one thing, the benefit that I have of with the brand, the manufacturer Millennial, and then, you know, the day job of being a company that does systems integration, you get to see a lot of cool stuff. And the one thing that I'm seeing that's spread between small to medium-sized businesses, which probably a lot of people are on here. You're that small to medium-sized manufacturer that's creating a lot of equipment, and also the large enterprise manufacturers as well, is focusing on better visibility and accessibility of your workers. I think one of the biggest things that you know, the pandemic really created awareness of is the value of the individual worker and the skill that they bring to the workforce, right?
Sure.
We thought we were automating systems and all this fancy equipment, but then we really quick realized, wow, nothing really happens if it's not for a worker who understands the process. So coming out of the pandemic, a lot more companies are saying, what can we do to give better visibility and accessibility to our workers to increase productivity on the floor?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and a lot of times when we think of humans and automation working together, you know, the first thing that always comes to mind is collaborative, like robotic systems and collaborative technology. And those are great. You know, the growth of collaborative robotics and humans working side by side on a manufacturing process is wonderful, and it's going to keep on growing. But I think the thing that we're really seeing is ease of accessible information and how much that can change the way we work. And a lot of it's because newer generations are coming in, right? When you look at millennials, and you look at, we are a digital native generation where we grew up our entire life with access to information from anywhere. You know, we could, Wikipedia was born when we were in middle school and high school, and we could literally go up on a website, learn about anything, and not just learn about things, but learn how to fix things.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite examples of this is, you know, Eric and Phil, when you guys were working on your car and you wanted to fix something 15 years ago.
We talked about this last week.
Yeah. You know, you went to AutoZone, you went to Napa or whatever, or Riley's or whatever, you know, look thing, and you went and bought a Haynes repair manual. And that's how you learn how to replace the alternator on your car, or change the brake pads, or, you know, put in a new spark plug.
Or a new mirror on a Toyota Tundra. Yeah,
exactly. But now, when we want to do something, what do? We go to YouTube. We literally type in the 1996 Ford F-250. That was the first car I ever had, was a Ford F-250.
Pulls it right up. Yep.
And it pulls it right up, video guiding me through that entire process.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, companies are seeing that, why, from a generation that understands how to solve problems on their own, how to gain access and data on their own, on their daily lives, why aren't they doing that through the manufacturing world as well. So what we're seeing now is companies adopting technology through either its digital work instructions or its collaborative wearable devices, where now I have a barcode reader or literally a phone, you know, that's strapped to my wrist that's giving me piece picking or understanding what my production is, or if I'm going around an inventory area and I'm pulling all of my components that I need to do a assembly of a kit, you know, that's all information that's going around real time, instead of this idea of beforehand, when you had to do something, you went over to an area, you picked up a whiteboard, you opened up a 3-ring binder, and that's how you set up your job. Funny story with that. This probably happened 5, 6 years ago. At the time I was in industrial sales, we were selling a lot of automation equipment. I went into a manufacturer one time and I was walking in there, walking on the floor, and they were literally dumping the automotive drum, the 4x4 automotive drum of parts in the trash can. I said, man, why are you guys throwing all that away? They found out that the maintenance tech who came in the night before set up the old job using the old instructions on a 3-ring binder he kept in his toolbox. And you probably all know that as well. You walk on the floor and you talk to the maintenance guy who's been there for 20 years, and he has the same exact piece of binder where he's making his own notes, all that stuff. Well, when they changed some specifications on the job, he never got the updated thing because it was just printed out, and he just went back to his old 3-ring binder, and you didn't have any revision control. You didn't have any controllability. So all of a sudden, companies are now realizing, well, geez, if all my work instructions are digital, if all of my setup instructions are digital, if my jobs that I want to run throughout the day for producing are all digital, you have complete control over revisions.
Yes,
exactly. And now not all of a sudden is it accessibility, it's also quality that's being designed through digital instruction. Another example is a company here in West Michigan, they manufacture components for drawers and slides in the furniture industry. And one of the issues that they were running into is they're literally writing down all their production, their scrap weight, their downtime, and everything on a whiteboard. And they have zero visibility to actually understand what does production look like that day. And do they have the understanding of what errors popped up? So they had 47% OEE, I think was their high calculation, you know, for shift one, and on their second shift, they were in the 30s, but they never had understanding of why the machine was not producing ever, because people just wrote stuff on the whiteboard and said, we had a machine fault. Why did you have a machine fault? What was the fault? Was there a jam? Was there a bad loaded part? Was it because you were waiting for material and the machine timed out? So what we see now with a lot of companies, going back to your original question, Eric, is manufacturers need to understand that connecting your worker to your machine to give better visualization isn't just to make your worker more efficient. It's to drive productivity as a company. And when you have your own, what I call islands or silos of manufacturing processes and equipment on your floor, but you don't have anything connected to an OT network, how are you truly understanding what's happening on your floor?
That's a great point. And I think one of the points that you brought up a little earlier is super important. And that is the worker. It's so important that the operator of that piece of equipment knows what winning looks like. What does winning look like today? And it's important that everybody knows that. And so at the end of the day, when they wipe that whiteboard clean, you know, the next shift comes in, they don't know, you know, how well did the previous shift do? All that information that was there is now gone. And trying to tie all that together just with a piece of paper or a whiteboard is very, very labor intensive. I say this a lot. I'm going to say it again. We're data rich and information poor. We have a ton of data, but we're really bad at being able to get that data and put it in some sort of useful format that makes everybody better, that helps everybody on that floor know what does winning look like.
And what is your indirect impact? I think that's another thing as well is, you know,
individual
performance, right? Yeah.
You know, we push this idea of gamification, right? You know, hey, how many parts are you picking, or what's your assembly rate, or what's your productivity time? But I think you'll never have the understanding of an individual seeing how much of an impact that they make on a company unless you show them through a dashboard. You show them what productivity looks like, because they're there, they're working 8-hour, 9-hour, 10-hour shifts. It's hard for them just to keep an understanding of that. But if you're visually showing them what productivity looks like for them and what good production looks like, they can get a better understanding of how they can help contribute.
It's interesting you bring up gamification. I watched nowadays when these kids, you know, logs on, nieces and nephews, their profile has got all this performance metrics of how well they've done at that game, right? I mean, and so when you join these online gaming forums and you start playing with me, you can start to pick people that are at your skill level, and you're not going into some game with this super expert, right? And so that type of information is so readily available to this whole gaming community, and they use that in a lot of ways to build their online scenarios. The same thing, I look at it with a connected worker, understanding what the performance is of those individual workers on the floor. That's so important. And that's a great, you know, I hadn't thought of it in the terms of the gamification, but when you look at it that way, you want to know what the performance is and the efficiency is of every person on the floor, and how do they get better?
Yeah. You know, I thought about this I relate it to sports, right? We've always talked about, and this is the great analogy that we've always used with people need to see what the score is as the game is going on, right? Same with the manufacturing floor. We want people to be able to see what the score is. So if you think about a basketball game, right, the old analogy, what happens if you would have covered up a scoreboard and expected the players to play an entire 48 minutes of basketball and then revealed the scoreboard after the game was over, right? Yeah. Well, how would they adjust? Well, just as important to that is that every quarter and at halftime, guess what they do? They go in and look at their individual stats to see how well are they doing. I need you to score more. I need you to play defense. I need you to do, right? So the coach is able to see individual performance and then make adjustments to the game and to the score as the game goes along. So I think it's no different than that. Everybody needs to be able to see what they're doing during the day and how they're impacting the actual score.
And I think for a lot of companies who are running multiple shifts, right, it gives you a better understanding of why is it that certain shifts run better? Why is it that certain skills run better? If you're looking across, let's just say you're a company that's has 20 line operators that are all doing very similar tasks, but then you all of a sudden begin to monitor and understand what is your top 3% or your top three workers or your top, let's just say, 15% of your workers doing that is making them so much better and outperform everyone else. Understand that they might have found a process that makes assembly more efficient. So it's one of those things is unless you have connected information and information that is that you could actually create actions on, it's actionable. You know, you can then as a manufacturer make yourself more productive as a whole, especially when individuals are such a wild card when it comes to productivity,
yeah,
right? When you're doing a piece of automated equipment, you can look at a PLC and understand stuff. But a lot of times when you're still focused on so much manual assembly, the only way you can truly understand that is sometimes through a connected worker who can get better visualization that way.
You know, and putting this into an L2L context, Eric, is, you know, you look at back in the early days, When we first started working with it, at that time, we called it the dispatch system, right? It was important to be able to track metrics on downtime of the equipment, but also of the technicians that were assigned to fix those. And how long did it take that technician? And it wasn't in an effort to call out people that maybe took longer. It was in an effort to say, hey, this machine took you 30 minutes to do. Eric has been able to fix this in 15 minutes. Let's get you guys together and have Eric show you what he's doing, right?
Yeah.
To get better, to allow us to all get better.
I'll go back to my sports analogy, the same thing. And I know Jake's a big Chicago Cub fan, but well, with baseball, think about it. You have 9 players on the field. And this is the same in manufacturing. You have 20 people on a manufacturing line. Listen, you are always going to have somebody that's the best, and you are always going to have somebody that's not the best at the bottom of the range. It doesn't matter what group of people you put into a skill-based system. You're always going to have people that are good. You're always going to have people that are bad. If you have a team, that doesn't mean you can always go out and have 9 or 20 of the absolute best people. It just doesn't work. Somebody's always going to be a best. Somebody's always going to be worse. Your systems have to be able to use the people you have and then bring those people up to speed as best as you can.
Yeah.
When That's it comes great, to that, you know example. What I mean?
Yeah.
So I get caught up in the leadership thought process of where people, you know, you have leaders who look at their team and look at the people down on the bottom of the skill rung and say, I wish I had different people. Yes, every single team leader wishes that. But that's not how it works. You're always going to have somebody who's the best. You're always going to have somebody who's the
worst. Well, and your ability as a leader is how effective and how well I can bring those people at the bottom up the rung.
Up the rung, right? Yeah. And my systems to do that.
Yes.
Do I have the right systems in place in order to do that? So, yeah.
And the thing I would add with that as well is, so the leaders in the manufacturing industry who are listening to this podcast right now, look at your workflow right now. Close your eyes. Look at your workflow. If you're driving, don't close your eyes. But, you know, now look at all of your skilled people on the floor. And more likely, those skilled people are of an older generation who's been working for you for a long time. And that Eric that we mentioned earlier, who's working on that factory floor, who's doing your tech, who's doing things better, who's doing a changeover, you know, in 15 minutes instead of 30 minutes. Well, he's retiring in 18 months.
Yeah.
Because he's been working for you for 20 years. He has all, it's not just that he's more efficient. He has 20 years of tribal knowledge.
Yes.
Yes.
That's keeping him efficient.
Yep.
When you're as a company, your asset is not losing a worker. Your asset is losing all of that knowledge.
Yeah.
That person has built up. The only way to efficiently retain that knowledge is through taking that knowledge and putting it into a digital means that can then be transferred to train and make available resources for future work.
This is the point I made last week at my seminar, was that this is the gap that a connected worker platform makes up, where our bottom rung of digital implementation has always been SCADA systems, PLCs that take this data. Our top level has been these massive enterprise softwares that kind of churn out the day-to-day, what we need to do and the accounting and all that stuff. But what's missing is this ability to capture exactly what you just said, Jake. How do I capture that tribal knowledge, and how do I do it in a digital format that people can then disseminate back out to the workforce that doesn't have that? I mean, that is where the connected worker comes into play massively right there. That's what's been missing in manufacturing. And that's where the new connected worker platforms like L2L actually make up the gap in there in order to help with that.
And that's where we're going to see productivity grow for the next decade.
Yep.
Is you're going to see a skilled base retiring with a younger generation that's eager to learn through a means of digital technology. You need to, as a company, provide the digital tools to make your younger workforce more efficient.
Right.
And that's just how things need to happen in the future.
What's made that older generation done such a good job and perform so well, and their ability to learn things is different than the newer generation coming up, right? The new guys, they absolutely crave and want and need to have that digitalization, right? They're not going to want to go pull the Encyclopedia Britannica out of the library.
They want to Google the Encyclopedia Britannica. Yeah.
Exactly. And that makes so much sense. And it's so much more efficient of a learning process for them in that environment.
Right? Yeah. I was telling somebody last week, I said, the reason why I carry my phone with me is not because I'm addicted to it. It's because I'm curious. And whenever I have a question in my head, what other movies did this actor play in? Yeah. What other, you know, where can I buy this? Or whatever pops into my head, man, I want to know right now. And that is the way to do it, is that you just jump on there and any answer to any question you ever want. And people need to be able to have that inside the manufacturing plant as well.
Yeah, sometimes you got to be careful.
and you know, to add on to that, just with my, you know, my thing being the manufacturing millennial, is, you know, I'm always advocating younger generations. In 2021, there was 36 million 3D printers sold to households in the U.S.
Wow.
36 million.
That's crazy.
And what's crazy about that is because younger generations, younger people are wanting to learn to create and to build on their own, right? You know, more younger generations are learning how to code, not by going to college, but going onto YouTube.
Right.
Or hopping onto a Discord channel, hopping on Reddit. So you have a younger generation who's keen to self-learning. And if you as a manufacturer can create opportunities for them to learn, that's how you're going to attract a future workforce. You know, we're always complaining we can't get workers into our companies of younger generations, getting millennials and Gen Zs to come and work for us. That's because a lot of times when they step into that manufacturing facility, it's where their grandparents used to work.
Yes.
And nothing's changed.
Yep.
Since your grandparents.
Yeah, we hand them a clipboard and a pencil and say, "Here, go take that data down for me." And they're like, "I'm out."
Write down some SPC.
Yeah, go write these SPC numbers.
You know, and a couple of months, I'm going to go speak at an HR conference, which is my first conference. Normally, I'm talking to engineers and managers and all that. But my first conference is talking about this to HR. And I think it's really important for that is because during the hiring process, what are we doing to showcase that we're creating a purpose and opportunity for younger generations? The biggest, I guess you could say, collaboration opportunity we can show them is showing that we're becoming a digital industry.
Yeah.
We're becoming an industry that they're comfortable with.
That's a great point.
And, you know, if we're out there and we're walking through and we're giving them a job tour of the manufacturing floor, and then we all of a sudden we walk up there and say, yeah, each station has a dashboard that shows its productivity. It shows how equipment, how fast the machine is running. There's the name right there that shows what current operator is running that task. You know, and this is showing how much of the production is already completed that day and how much it needs to do. And by the current rate that it's running, how much time is left in that shift. You know, all that information gives people all of a sudden, going back to that whole entire gamer thing of gamer stats,
yeah.
It immediately resonates with them.
Yeah.
Because if you're out there and you're doing a first person shooter game and you're going out there and say, hey, I had this many hits, I had this amount of accuracy, I had this many, this was my K to D ratio, this is how many miles that I ran in my game, you know. They love statistics. They love data.
Yep.
But not only is it to attract a worker, but that's all action, you know, actionable information as you as a manufacturer can drive productivity on.
Well, as leaders, right? Too. You know, we touched on this, but yeah, as a leader of in manufacturing, I want to know that information so then I can make the right adjustments to the team.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like if I'm out in a boat and I'm fishing and I'm not hitting anything, right. But I ask the guy across from me and say, hey, what are you throwing? He says, I'm throwing a Texas worm rig. You betcha I'm going to put that crankbait back and, you know, toss that worm out.
Yes.
Eric throws M80s. I do.
You've seen some of the lures I have. They are bombs. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. One thing in your profile, Jake, that I found interesting, and I like that you point this out, is the importance of relationships, building relationships and building the right relationships. And I can't say enough, you know, throughout my manufacturing career, relationships are so key and they're so important and building that trust. And where it comes down to me is really empowering and trusting the worker to do the right thing. Almost everybody goes to work every day with the intent of wanting to do a good job. You know, you have your outliers, right? But for the most part, people 95% of the people want to come and do a good job every single day. And if they feel trusted and empowered to go do the right thing, that your success ratio increases exponentially. And so I love that you point that out because to me, that's a really big part of manufacturing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think what it does is it shows that there's opportunity for them in the future.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's the one thing is, you know, people are saying, oh, everyone's working at Grubhub, everyone's working at Uber Eats and doing these deliveries. There's no relationship between that person and the company and the owner. There's no future opportunity that's being created. You're not gonna get promoted as a Grubhub driver, you know? Right. So yeah, coming out of high school, yeah, it's a great little opportunity for you to pick your own things. But when you want to go on and get something, you know,
substantial,
more value out of it, when all of a sudden you realize you can't raise a couple kids, if that's your goal, and, you know, have a family, you need to change stuff. And they're going to be looking for what industries allow them to have a future career.
That's a great point.
And the one thing that, you know, that I love about manufacturing is, you could be successful if you have a 4-year engineering degree, or you could be successful if you have a GED with a good work ethic.
Yes.
And that's just the one thing that no matter what level of education you go into manufacturing, there's an opportunity for you to grow if you have the attitude to do it.
Yeah, I would take somebody with a good positive attitude over a credentialed guy with a piece of paper that says I went to school for 4 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Give me the guy with the right attitude and the willingness to learn and you can do a lot of things.
Well, I think you're absolutely correct too, Jake. I mean, in manufacturing, and I think a lot of people don't realize this, is that, and I love the fact that you said you started off sweeping the floors and washing the machines, because that's exactly where I started
in
McDonnell Douglas, exactly how it worked.
Same for me.
But you can, that's where you enter the pipeline. But then once you get into the end of manufacturing, there are so many different skill sets that are needed in a manufacturing plant. If you love accounting, if you love, you know, coding, if you love maintenance, if you, whatever, you can then find your way into that. And so I, again, and you did this well earlier, but if, for those of you that are listening to this podcast, if you're just getting involved in manufacturing, or if you're looking for a career path, understand that with inside of manufacturing, the entry path into manufacturing, it is the washing machine, sweeping floors, or working on a production line. But if you show some initiative and you show some interest in a different skill set, you can quickly move into those and start doing exactly what you love to do for the rest of your life and have a pretty stable, great career with inside of manufacturing.
And manufacturing is not going anywhere.
No,
the numbers. No. I'm so excited. I'm getting ready to release my, you know, state of industry for 2023. And manufacturing looks like, you know, we were at 12.7 million people in the industry last year. We're at 12.9 this year. We went up another percent on our impact to the U.S. GDP. We're growing. I mean, manufacturing is growing, and it's going to continue to reshore, nearshore. It's just like, jobs aren't leaving America in manufacturing. Jobs are coming back, more opportunities created. And honestly, more high-tech manufacturing is being created. When you look at, you know, manufacturing overseas in some areas, there's a lot of more production in some places, but they're not anywhere near the high-tech production that we're doing. And we're creating the jobs and the impact that truly are changing the way we live and helping us grow as a country.
Yeah. One of the things we do on this show is about once a month, we do a shout out for all the people that are bringing jobs back or creating jobs in manufacturing, and try to, you know, just kind of recognize those companies that are doing that.
So, you know, and by doing that, that's really helped as we researched that. It's really brought to light to me some of the awesome and cool things
that
we are bringing back, we are opening up and starting to
creating,
do, you right know, here. It's just doing that research has been a big eye opener.
Before we jump off here, Jake, one question I wanted to ask you is to tell us, I saw you did a post the other day with a glove mounted scanner, inventory scanner. That was awesome. Tell us about some of the really cool things that you're seeing inside of manufacturing.
Well, I'll just use, so I was at ProMat a couple of weeks ago, which is the big logistics warehouse, you know, in Chicago a few weeks ago. I would say the coolest thing that I'm seeing is how much AI and robotics is collaborating together now, machine learning. So before, industrial robotics was just very much a very discrete point-to-point picking for manufacturing. Now, all of a sudden, when you add an AI or machine learning, you know, platform behind it, it's totally flexible now, which is allowing us to solve a lot of really dull tasks that humans have had to do for a long time. So the impact of AI and ML is really exciting. I would also say device wearables, everything from, you know, the wearable barcode scanners to, I'm really seeing a comeback with heads up displays that people could wear for glasses. They're not bulky anymore. They're not heavyweight. Mm. They're very accessible just to give some basic visual information that's there. I think a lot of time beforehand, what made them just fail is they tried to do too much. Yeah. Now it's something as simple as, what is the very next step, or what's that number that I'm looking for that's next? You know, if you're going out there and you're picking stuff off of a cart, you don't need all this information. You just simply need, what's my part number that I'm picking, or what's the row I'm going down?
What's the part number and what's the quantity? Huh?
And as your connected OT network tracks that worker, it says, oh, go down aisle row 13. Well, now the system sees you're on row 13. Now it's saying go to shelf 3, and it just guides you through that. So it's just all that, it's doing all of that simple or all the tedious work for you to make the worker's life simpler.
Yeah. So a great example of this is, like, my wife knows the grocery store much better than I know. Right.
This has been one of my pet peeves in life.
Right. Yeah. So she sends me to the grocery store with this list, and it is such an inefficient process because I go from this end and I'm literally going down the list. Yeah. Right. I don't put it in any kind of organized fashion to say, well, I'm on this row. There's 4 items on here. 2 of them are at the bottom of the list. No, I go item by item, and it is literally mess.
Thank heavens our lean senseis are not watching our route in the grocery store.
It blows my mind how a lot of grocery stores don't have an app yet where you could just type in
here's my list
and it will tell you what row. Like, it's still,
you know why? Blows my mind. You know why? Because they know that I'm going to go down some aisles that I and
grab stuff you really don't need.
Oh, you know what? Just that like looks Costco. Really good. That's right. I'm going to buy that.
You walk in for one thing, you walk out $300 later with a basket full of stuff.
I go to Costco to pick up a new thing of toilet paper, a paper towel, and $750 later.
Exactly.
I got some new porch furniture.
They're not
crab legs or something.
There is no incentive for those guys to fix this. Right. They love it when these guys walk in the store, right?
We're as dumb as a box of rocks when we walk in there looking for stuff.
So. I know.
Oh man! All right. Hey, we've used up enough time, buddy. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully, let's plan on you getting out here. We'll do some fishing. We'll try to get back. We'd love to come musky fishing, fly musky fishing, that'd be awesome. So, hey, tell everybody where they can find you. Where can they go find Jake, the Manufacturing Millennial?
Yeah. First place, hop on LinkedIn, just search Jake Hall or the Manufacturing Millennial. I'm going to pop right up. I'll be your first search result. If you want more information, you can go to themanufacturingmillennial.com.
Awesome.
Great.
Awesome.
Jake, it's been a pleasure to meet you as well. And man, I look forward to continue to watch your content. Like I said, we're kicked off a great friendship here. Yeah, so let's keep this going, man.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you bet. All right, everybody. Okay, hey, thanks for joining the Manufacturing Stream podcast. As always, brought to you by L2L, the easiest, most affordable, fastest path to bring about digital transformation in your factory. Go follow us, L2L, on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Again, Peggy Coombe, we're looking forward to having you come out to the Connected Workforce Summit. And congratulations on that. Again, I'm Eric Whitley, Director of Smart Manufacturing, and this guy is
Phil Anderson.
Thanks, Jake, for joining us. We appreciate it, man, and have a great week.
Yep, take care.
All right, everybody. Thanks. See you later.